Please turn in your Bibles again to Exodus chapter 20. We'll be reading the Ten Commandments, as has been our custom for each of the commandments that we've been studying thus far. Today we look at the Eighth Commandment, "Thou shalt not steal," as the Old King James has it. Exodus chapter 20, verses 1 through 17. Let's give careful attention to the reading of God's most holy and infallible word. "And God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male servant, or his female servant, or his ox, or his donkey, or anything that is your neighbor's. The grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God stands forever." Some of you know the name Rod Serling. Some of you do. He was many, many years ago the host of a TV show called The Twilight Zone. Now, the show itself was rather interesting, to say the least, but it's more something that dear old Rod said one time when speaking about his time that he read Augustine's Confessions. You see, Rod was a little bit confused because he was reading Augustine's Confessions, that part where Augustine recounts the story of how when he was a little boy, he would steal fruit from the market store. And he would just grab the fruit and steal it and eat it. And Augustine said he didn't even like that kind of fruit. Well, the problem is that Rod missed the whole point of that story. He could not figure out why Augustine was confessing such a trivial thing. What's the big deal? Well, see, Rod missed the point. Augustine's point was not so much that it wasn't that big of a deal. It was the fact that Augustine was confessing it because he recognized that the reason why he wanted to steal it was just so that he could steal it. It was an issue with the heart. And as Augustine said, he didn't even really care for that kind of fruit. It was just because he could. And that kind of shows what our hearts can sometimes be like. When we're in the Eighth Commandment, the question of stealing, "Thou shalt not steal." We've been looking at these Ten Commandments, one each week. Last week, we looked at the Seventh Commandment, "Thou shalt not commit adultery," emphasizing the fact that that command teaches us purity and honor of the marriage bond. Well, today, we're looking at the Eighth of the Ten Commandments, and this concerns property. Property, mostly property, but other things can certainly be included in this, but mostly about property. And what I want us to see today is that the Eighth Commandment teaches us to deal justly with our own and others' possessions. The Eighth Commandment teaches us to deal justly with our own and others' possessions. And we'll look at this under two simple points. First of all, the eighth commandment forbids theft. And secondly, the eighth commandment requires stewardship. So firstly, the eighth commandment forbids theft. Thou shalt not steal. You shall not steal. Now, again, this is a situation where in English we have more words than are there in the Hebrew. It's already a short command, four words in English. But in the Hebrew, just like the sixth commandment, for example, and even the seventh, there's only two words. The word no or not, and then the verb to steal. No stealing. It's kind of a quick way that you can put it. They knew how to be short and succinct, did they not? Now, this particular word occurs some 60 times in the Old Testament. It occurs first, not here. You see, in the sixth and seventh commandment, the first occurrences of those words were in the commandment themselves. But the first occurrence of this verb to steal actually occurs in Genesis chapter 30 in Jacob's conversation with Laban. And you may recount that their little deal that they had going with the sheep, Jacob said, well, just count it as stolen. And that's the word that's used here. But what does it mean? Yeah, simple to say that it means to steal, and that's true. It certainly does. But really, it's got behind it the idea of taking that which belongs to another without his consent or knowledge. But it's also restricted to a certain kind of stealing. It's restricted to those acts of theft that are done secretly or by stealth. Think of a pickpocket, for instance. Pickpockets are very sneaky. And perhaps some of you have even seen some professional, shall we say, pickpockets videos on YouTube of how they could be standing there talking to somebody and distract you in such a way that all of a sudden, where'd my wallet go? Stealth, secrecy, deceit. That's the kind of theft that's being talked about. There are other words in the Hebrew that deal with violent theft. So in the parable of the Good Samaritan, for instance, the man who was attacked, that would have been given a different Hebrew word because he was robbed violently, beaten, and left dead. We might think of modern day examples, for instance, of a bank robbery. That's out in the open. It's public. It's violent. But this particular word here, thou shalt not steal, deals with secrecy, stealth. Nevertheless, all kinds of thievery are subsumed under this one command. Now, why do we need this command? Well, why do we need any command? The problem is that we do it. Let's face it. Why do we need to be told not to do something? Or why do we need to be told to do something? It's either because we're doing it or not doing it, as the case may be. We need this commandment, do not steal, because we have a theft problem in our hearts. And how pervasive this sin can demonstrate itself in so many possible ways. We could spend all day talking about possibilities. Well, here's one example. Perhaps you're walking down the street and you see somebody and pulling out their wallet, they drop a $20 bill. What do you do? Do you just pick it up and just keep on going, pretending like you didn't see it? Or do you say, excuse me, sir, you dropped that money? You know, we live in such a day and an age when people actually do that, that's shocking. What a sad case that is. That to see somebody pull a $20 bill and it accidentally falls out, unbeknownst to the owner, and then you actually, oh, here, sir, you dropped this. People find that surprising. People find it surprising when you go out to your car after shopping at Walmart or Target, you realize you had something on the bottom of the cart. Oh, I forgot to pay for that. And you go back in and you pay for it. They're shocked. But see, the difficulty is, with respect to all this, it is so pervasive that companies that sell products offset their losses in the prices of goods. You want to know why things are getting so expensive? Part of the reason is because built into those prices are the loss of theft. But you know something? It's not actually just the loss of the goods due to theft. Because when you walk around Walmart or Target, I'm picking on them today for some reason, but you can walk around and look up into the rafters and the ceilings, and what do you notice? Cameras. Lots of places also have security guards walking around. Well, those costs get incorporated into us who are honest. So it's not just about the loss of goods. Even the legal costs of prosecution. Do you realize that in many of the states in this country, the legal cost for prosecution actually falls on the store? So all of these things, it is such a pervasive problem. That's why everywhere you go in these stores, there's cameras. But it's also even theft in the workplace. Office supplies. Well, hey, my tape dispenser broke. I'll just lift one off my desk at work. Pens. Now, I'm actually kind of infamous for this. I do this when I was teaching. I would do this not even thinking. I would have pens, and I would just put them in my pocket because I'm using it. I needed a place to put it. Well, I ended up with this huge stack of pens at home. Well, I brought them back. Let students use them and things like that. But it's not this forgetfulness. It's actually taking supplies. You know what? I need paper for my printer. They're not going to miss this one pack of 500 sheets of paper. There's boxes and boxes and boxes. Who's going to miss it? Workplace theft. Even time. Time. One of the interesting things, and some of you know I like sports. I watch baseball, watch college basketball, March Madness recently. One of the interesting things about the March Madness app or the March Madness website to be able to stream the games live on the website, there was this little thing called the boss button. And the purpose of the boss button was that if your boss was coming around while you were working, you could just click it and it would just instantly change to things that looked like you were working. This is the idea. Here we have the NCAA, which is an organization for student athletes in educational institutions, putting on their website a means by which you cannot work. And they're so concerned about having athletes that are noble and so forth. Sportsmanship. But we're teaching the world out there to just push a button to make it look like you're working. You're stealing their money. You're stealing their time. Half working or not working to your best effort. Taking your time when you don't need to. But there's also things like false insurance claims. How many people will fake an injury in order to, quote, sue a company? They get rear-ended, and it's just a fender bender, but they come out saying, oh, my neck, in order to sue. But people will also exaggerate their tax deductions. Well, I gave $1,000 to charity. Let's just say it was $1,200 instead. Who's going to miss it? Owners. You see, it's not individuals. It's owners of companies who do this as well. Price gouging. False advertising. You ever notice that in car companies that this car is the most reliable car. Come in and buy it. So you make the deal to buy the car, and then they sit you down and say, here's why you need an extended warranty package. Yeah. false advertising, deceptive packaging. This is the one that gets me. You ever notice nowadays that the cartons of orange juice and half gallons of milk are no longer half gallons? Did you ever notice that? They're 59 ounces now. Deceptive packaging. They present it as though it's been a half gallon, like it's always been. But there's also theft from God. Theft from God. Our giving is not what it should be. We steal time on the Lord's day. You see, the Lord's day, as we looked at when we looked at the fourth commandment, is a day dedicated to the Lord and worshiping Him. When we take that time away from worshiping Him, we're stealing His time. Now, why do people steal? We see its pervasiveness, but why do people do it? Well, poverty is actually a legitimate reason. Turn with me, if you would, to Proverbs chapter 30. In political realms, people don't like to use poverty as an excuse, but the fact of the matter is the Bible actually does use it as an excuse. Proverbs chapter 30. Most of us know this in verses 8 and 9, really that second line there in verse 8. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me. And note the reason. Lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or, the opposite extreme, lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. You see, the author there recognizes that poverty tempts people to steal. It's a reality. It's never an excuse, but it's a reality. And in fact, elsewhere, the author of Proverbs reminds us not to hate a man who steals in order to feed his family, though he still needs to pay back. He doesn't excuse it, but he also recognizes that poverty can be a real reason that people steal. Also, envy. Envy of what other people have. And this is where the advertising kicks in. They make it look like the greatest thing on earth. And toy companies are infamous for this. Boys and girls, if you see commercials on TV and you think it is the greatest toy in the whole wide world, it probably isn't. And you know what happens? And you know I'm right with this. You know I'm right with this. You really want this particular toy for your birthday. Oh, mom, dad, please let me have this. And you get it. And for a couple of weeks, it's your favorite toy. But then after a few weeks, it's hiding under the bed because you forgot about it. You want to know why you forgot about it? Because it's not the greatest toy in the world. But see, adults do the same thing. Think about when we get a new car. Oh, how we baby that thing. We don't want to get a scratch. We'll park it on the far end of the Walmart parking lot so nobody dings it. But after a few months, it's just a car. We realize the elation goes down. What's another reason? Discontentment with God's lot for you. You are discontent with what God has given you. This is a pervasive issue. Why people steal is because they are just not content. Lord, you're not smart enough to give me what I know I really need. Lack of trust in God's providential provision. Just plain old sin. I steal because I can. That was Augustine with the fruit. I steal because I can. I can get away with it. It's fun. It's thrilling to try to do it. Anger and resentment toward God for blessing others differently than yourself. It's related to that envy and discontentment. But brothers and sisters, you and I need to remember first and foremost that all things belong to God. He owns the cattle on a thousand hills. Thus, when we give our offerings each week, we're just giving back that which already belongs to Him. When you steal, or even when you're tempted to steal, you are ignoring the fact that God owns it all, everything. But wait a second. Don't I own it? Well, yes, there's a sense where you do own it. That's certainly true. And this actually then brings us to our second point. The eighth commandment requires stewardship. You shall not steal. That's a forbidding command, but it requires also that we do something instead. We need to be good stewards. Well, what is stewardship? Well, really, the most basic meaning of stewardship is just really taking care of something. That's the most fundamental, basic understanding. Thus, somebody who is a steward has the responsibility to care for something else. But in the Bible, and even our culture understands this as well, biblically it goes deeper than that. It's taking care of another person's property or their estate. That's really what stewardship is all about. It is caring for, looking after, being careful with other people's things, other people's property or estate. Joseph in the Old Testament is an example of this, even though he was technically a slave. In Genesis chapter 39, verse 8, we read these words in Joseph refusing Potiphar's wife's advances. But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge." So though technically Joseph was sold into slavery and Potiphar bought him, he was acting as a steward. Everything was under his charge. He took care of it all. And Potiphar didn't have to worry about it because Joseph was a good steward. And one of those things that he was responsible for was even Potiphar's wife, who belonged to Potiphar. "He has put everything in my charge." And in fact, Joseph, the same thing happened when he was in prison. When he was falsely accused by Potiphar's wife and then thrown in prison, all things were well cared for because Joseph had it. Even as a prisoner, he served as a steward. The responsibility of caring for another person's property and charge. But what is all of this grounded in? Well, brothers and sisters, this is grounded in creation itself. Good stewardship is not a result of the fall. Good stewardship comes to us from the very beginning at creation, when there was no sin, when you and I should have had the responsibility to care for that which was given to us, because at the end of the day, it was God's. God created all things in the space of 6 days, and all very good, as the Shorter Catechism reminds us. Therefore, God owns it all of it. You and I have and take great pride in the good things that we make with our hands, don't we? When you make it yourself, there's a little bit of sense of satisfaction there. A job well done, and you care for it a little bit more. You don't just lend it out to anybody. You care for it. You give it to people who know will take care of it as well. God created all things good, and He created man. Part of the reason for which He created man was to care for His own creation. Stewardship. Man was given stewardship. Look at chapter 1 of Genesis, verse 28. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. Subdue it. Have dominion over it. This is his command of stewardship. All things God is to have stewardship over. And in Genesis chapter 2, we see it even more pronounced when God places the man, Adam, into the garden. What is he to do in the garden? Work it, keep it, watch it, till it, all of it. Because it's God's creation. Stewardship. Even the naming of the animals. Whatever the man said, that's what it was called. That's an exercise of the stewardship that God had given him. Well, how does stewardship work for us in today's day and age? First and foremost, I've mentioned it already, but I'll mention it again because we need to really make this sink into our heads. It begins with a recognition that all things belong to God. If you don't start there, you really don't have a foundation for anything else. Everything belongs to him. This is why when we give back in our offering, we make the recognition that it's God's. He doesn't need it, but in his providence, he uses it. He uses it to advance his kingdom, but he also uses it to increase our faith, that we would trust in his providence. Another aspect is not only do we need to recognize that God owns it all, but we also need to recognize that God has given others stewardship. So the things that they own, God has given to them to watch over, not you. Thus, as we see here, then, the command is not just simply about caring for your own goods, which it certainly is, your own estate. It's also caring about the goods and estate of others. The Lord has blessed you with the use of his things, your house, your tools, your appliances, your clothes. He's given it to you, so you care for it. But likewise, the very good gifts that he gives to your neighbors, to your brothers and sisters sitting next to you, those are theirs. You need to help them care for it. You see, we live in a day and an age where the motto is finders, keepers, losers, weepers. How many of you have heard that before? Yeah, see everybody. See, how many of you have used it before? Right? That's the problem with the culture today. Hey, I found it, it's mine. Related to that is another expression. It sounds a little bit more adult-like. Possession is 9/10 of the law. We've heard that one too. But see, brothers and sisters, you and I have a responsibility to care for other people's properties. Turn with me, if you will, to Deuteronomy chapter 22. This is just one example. There are others. Deuteronomy chapter 22, verses 1 through 4. You shall not see your brother's ox or his sheep going astray and ignore them. And if he does not live near you and you do not know who he is, you shall bring it home to your house and it shall stay with you until your brother seeks it. Then you shall restore it to him, and you shall do the same with his donkey or with his garment, or with any lost thing of your brother's which he loses and you find. You may not ignore it. You shall not see your brother's donkey or his ox fallen down by the way and ignore them. You shall help him to lift them up again. Notice the principle here. If you have something that belongs to your brother, you keep it carefully. You care for it until he claims it. You don't treat it as your own. Now, I realize that there are occasions where you walk down the street and there's nobody to be seen and you look down and there's a $20 bill. I get that. What we're speaking of here is if there is something that you know belongs to somebody else, you make every effort to try to get it back to them. Thus, you see, and it warms the heart, you see signs posted on the telephone poles. Lost dog, lost cat. You try to give it back to the owner if you can. But even things that your neighbor lends to you, you ought to treat it better than they would. Now, I realize sometimes people don't treat their own things very well, but the principle is you need to treat it well. Care for it. Here in the church, we meet in a storefront facility. We rent it. But we've got the responsibility to care for this place, not tear it up. Treat it with respect and well. All things. The chairs. Well, we own the chairs. But the walls even. The bathrooms. The sinks. Everything. We treat it with respect and care. We care for it. Being good stewards. We treat it better than we treat our own things. If they lend it to you, care for it, use it as it is intended, and then, here's the most important thing, give it back. Now, I realize sometimes it, you know, hey, take it for as long as you need. I get that. That happens. But when you're done with it, give it back. That's good stewardship. We need to care also for other people. This is where the heart of stewardship comes in. Caring for other people. Earlier in the service, we read Ephesians 4:28. And as some of the older English translations put it, let him that stole steal no more. Rather, let him labor, working with his hands, the thing which is good that he might give to those in need. It's not simply enough to say, well, I'm not stealing. Well, that's true. Technically, you're not going into the store and stealing a TV. I get it. But part of the command is also to work with our hands in such a way that we will be able to give to those in need, real need. Thus, your labors, your employments, are not just merely about yourself. You should be looking for ways to help others who are in need, first and foremost within the church. Now, it's true. Many people in the church that have needs are not going to make them public. This is part of the reason for a deacon's offering. Now, we have elders and deacons that help shepherd Christ's sheep. So that those who are in need and who may be a little embarrassed about that need may rely upon them to help provide for them. And the deacon's offering is one way to help. Sometimes also, and we've seen this happen both here and in other churches, sometimes when there's a hardship or a birth even, we provide meals. Giving to those in need. Why? Because there's a need for recovery. There's needs that need to be done. Taking the good things that God has given to us to use and benefiting others. That's really what this commandment is about. It all belongs to him. Therefore, he's going to want it bestowed for the benefit of his people. So, brothers and sisters, that's where your heart needs to be. Not in what I can get. You see, you can get things legally but still have a heart of theft. Because you just want it. It's mine. But no, our attitude and our heart ought to be one of giving, gratitude, generosity, especially to the household of believers. So instead of stealing and having a heart coveting other things, we should be looking and asking for ways that I can use the things that God has given me for the benefit of others. That's what this commandment is about. This is what the Shorter Catechism in its mentioning, that we are looking out for our own estate and the estate of others. Our own wealth and the wealth of others. You may not feel wealthy, but you really are. Thus, I would challenge you not only to be good stewards of the things that the Lord has given you, but to be good stewards of the property and possessions and the goods of other people, especially in the church. The Lord Jesus Christ gave all for your sake. He gave all. He didn't have to give anything, and he would have been well within his rights. He gave his life. He shed his blood on your behalf and gave it in abundance. With all the good gifts that God has given to you, I challenge you, be a blessing to others in the way that Christ has blessed you. And pray for a heart of generosity. Pray for a heart that will not seek to get every cent you possibly can into your bank account. Don't be stingy. Be generous. The Lord promises in the Old Testament that if you give generously, he says, test me. Test me. So brothers and sisters, test him and see whether or not God will open the floodgates of blessing upon you. Let's pray.